About 100 years ago, two brothers in Scotland grew up in a coal mining region in a relatively poor family setting in the coal mining area there, and parents were always struggling to make ends meet, but they loved the Lord. Father loved the Lord, and he would be out in the streets helping his city get in touch with God. One of the brothers decides to make it his life objective to become financially independent by the time he's 30. He didn't want to relive the home situation of struggle. The other brother determined to dedicate his life in doing nothing that would not bring glory to God. The one stayed in Scotland and accomplished his goal. The other one sailed to Africa. And 20 years later, he dies in Africa. And a continent wept when he died. And the world was affected. And Africa was opened up to the greatest mission movement ever known. When England sent for his body to bury him in Westminster, the Africans reluctantly let him have the body, but they said, "We will keep his heart." They cut out his heart and they buried it in Africa because they said, "His body you can have, but his heart belongs to Africa." David's brother, John, if you can find mention of him anywhere, will simply state, "Brother of David Livingstone." When you look up David Livingstone, you'll see articles and articles about the great missionary explorer that he was, found the source of the Nile, opened up Africa for other missions and the Western world to follow. Living for a cause bigger than your life. I love the causes that I know are being birthed in the heartbeat of many causes that are here, embodied in this group of people. And what we saw this morning, causes rising up bigger than what we can accomplish in our own minds and dreams. Another young man, William Borden of Yale, England, born into a family of great wealth, the Borden Dairy family. And he was in line to take on the family business. And by the time he went to college, he was already a millionaire back in early 1900s. William Borden, instead of taking on the family business, felt the call of God to go into missions. And God laid it on his heart to go to China and serve the Muslims of China back in the early 1900s. So he prepares himself, and at the age of 25, he sets out to go to China. And stops off in Egypt to study Arabic so he can minister to the Chinese Muslims. And while in Egypt, he contracts spinal meningitis and he dies in Egypt. Never reaches his destiny that he wanted, but his life impacted the world. He had studied in the U.S., and when the news of his death reached one of the Ivy League schools, it was publicized and sent around the United States in the newspapers about this young man, William Borden of England, who was heir to a great wealth but decided to give up his life for a cause much bigger than his own. When they sent his Bible and body back to England, one of his friends picked up his Bible, and in the front of his Bible he had written, "No reserves, no retreat, and no regrets. What a testimony to live for causes much bigger than comfort, satisfaction of our own selves, and for a selfish posture. My message this morning, I entitled, Is There Not a Cause? And just that. Is there not a cause? And I could add on, for your life, or for your purpose, for being here today. Or we could say, don't waste your life. Don't waste it. Some people would have thought and said that William Borden wasted his life when he could have had so much. But there's a cause and a reason that God has us to be here. He has a sense of cause that he wants to put on each of our lives. By cause, I mean our reason for living. I mean the purpose behind my choices and the things that I do and live for. Is there not a cause? Is there a cause in our lives? Is there a cause in your life? Paul said, out of the 1,001 things I do, this one thing I do, I focus. I focus on the purpose of God to advance the kingdom. And whether that is being a tent maker, or whether it's preaching the gospel, sailing the seas, being in prison, in sickness, in victory, whatever situation, this one thing I do, I pursue the heart of God for my life, that all men would be benefited for the kingdom. If we do not have a cause, if we do not have a sense of cause, we really are wasting our lives. We're wasting our lives. Don't waste your life. And that's my challenge this morning, that we do not waste our lives, but that we make the cause for which God has us here in this time in history, in our family, in this church, in this community, wherever we are right now, that there's a cause, and we know that cause. So, if there is a cause, should we not ask, what can I do to advance that cause? What can I do? What can you do to advance the cause in your life? I take my text from 1 Samuel chapter 17. This is the if we put that up, because I'll be reading from the King James. I know many of you probably don't have that. But follow with me in this story about David. And I'm not going to be focusing on the giant slayer so much as I'm looking at what drove David's life, what caused him to live with such optimism and passion for the glory of God and for the nation of Israel. So let's read from 1 Samuel chapter 17, verse 15. But David went and returned from Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem. I just want you to follow through with the causes that David lived for and did. In the little, in the simple, in the big. David went and returned from Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem. He had been ministering to Saul with music when Saul was had this evil spirit come on him. And the Philistine drew near morning and evening and presented himself 40 days. And Jesse said unto David his son, take now for thy brethren an ephah of this parched corn and these 10 loaves, and run to the camp to your brethren, and carry these 10 cheeses unto the captain of their 1,000, and look how thy brethren fare, and take their pledge. Now Saul and they and all the men of Israel were in the valley of Elah, fighting with the Philistines. And David rose up early in the morning and left the sheep with a keeper, and took and went as Jesse had commanded him. And he came to the trench as the host was going forth to the fight, and shouted for the battle. For Israel and the Philistines had put the battle in array, army against army. And David left his carriage in the hand of the keeper of the carriage, and ran into the army, and came and saluted his brethren. And as he talked with them, behold, there came up the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, out of the armies of the Philistines, and spake according to these same words, And David heard them. And all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him, for they were sore afraid. And the men of Israel said, "Have you seen this man that is come up? Surely to defy Israel is he come up. And it shall be that the man who kills him, the king will enrich him with great riches and will give him his daughter and make his father's house free in Israel." And David spake to the men that stood by him, saying, "What shall be done to the man that kills this Philistine and takes away this reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" And the people answered him after this manner, saying, "So and so shall be done to the man that kills him." And Eliab, the eldest brother, heard when he spake unto the men, and Eliab's anger was kindled against David. And he said, "Why hast thou come down hither? And with whom hast you left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know thy pride and the naughtiness of thine heart, for thou art come down that thou mightest see the battle." And David said, "What have I now done? Is there not a cause? Is there not a cause?" Wow. Amazing. You know, here the Israel had a system in place. They had a war going on, but they wouldn't fight. They had everything was in place. Everything was there for the battle, but no one would fight. And David comes there, and the zeal of the Lord of hosts stirs within him, and he says, "Why hasn't anybody risen up with courage? Don't you know who you are? We are the people of God. We serve the living God." Eliab, he says, "What are you doing here, David? What do you think you're doing here? You're just a little kid. You're a little teenager. What are you doing here?" You know what David could have said to him? He said, "What are you doing here? What are you all doing here? This is war. This needs to be, look like war. What are you doing here? Is there not a cause? Is there not a reason we exist as a people? Isn't that a reason that we serve the living God? Is there not a hope for our people?" You know, sometimes we have systems in place, whether it's in our homes or our churches or wherever. We have systems in place, our schools, and we say, this is the way things are supposed to function. And you know, we just kind of get into a mode. And the glory of God is smothered sometimes, and we're not seeing the glory of God. And someone rises up and says, "Here's the way of the Lord. Here's what God would have us do." And we're like, "Who do you think you are? You're a newcomer. You're a little fella. You're young." Whatever. You know, when God's Spirit rises up upon a man and a woman, a child, let it come forth. Let it be seen. Let the glory of the Lord be manifest. David said, "This is a reproach to Israel. Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he thinks he could defy the armies of the living God?" David said, "This is all about God. This is not about me and you. This is not about the Philistine. This is about God. This is about his glory. This is about the purpose for which we exist as a nation, that God would be seen and lifted up." David says, "We're God followers. We're not people pleasers. We're meant to be on the top and not the bottom. We're meant to be the head, not the tail. That's what God told us." See, David had a sense of cause. He had a sense of destiny for his people. And that's my first point, is that David had a sense of destiny and understanding about the purpose of God in the nation of Israel. Somehow the army kind of overlooked that, forgot about it, didn't think about it, was scared away from those thoughts, and were paralyzed. We're talking about a Sunday school about being paralyzed with stuff and things in our past, things in our present. We get paralyzed because we get our eyes off of God. David's trying to get the eyes of the people back on God. David remembered Pharaoh. There was another terrorist before in their lives, way back in their history, Pharaoh, who said, I'm not going to let these people go. You're going to serve me and my purposes. David remembered the great deliverance and the people who stood up to Pharaoh and said, let my people go. And they did go, eventually. David remembered the Red Sea and the impossibility of how you're going to cross all these people across the sea, an ocean, a water that is so big and deep you can't go across. David remembered how God miraculously opened. He heard the stories. They were told over and over in his life. He remembered 40 years of miraculous provision of God through the wilderness for the people of God, his people, his predecessors, the people that came before him. The stories were passed down of how God moved mightily and gave water out of rocks and manna every day and quail, provision of God miraculously, and how when kings and countries would not let them pass, they would come to fight, and this group of people who were not soldiers at all, never trained in battle, would go out and defeat the enemies over and over in the 40 years of wandering through that wilderness experience. David knew that, and he trusted in his God. He knew about Jericho and how the impossible was done as God asked his people to do something incredulous, and they obeyed, and the walls fell down. God did it. There's nothing that can stand against the purpose and plan of God if people are willing to move and act for the cause that God has for us. And David understood. They were just coming out of this 200 years of judges' rule, ruling in Israel. When the nation of Israel went up and down and up, they'd serve God, they'd fall away, another judge would rise up, they'd fall away until another man knew his calling, and they would rise up and it would defeat the enemy. And for 200 years, just a vicious cycle of up and down, of defeat and loss, until men would rise up. And finally, there was no man left to rise up anymore. And a woman rose up and said, I'll lead Israel. I'll lead them to fight in the name of the Lord. Let God get the glory. Woman will get praise for it. Deborah rose up and she led Israel to defeat Sisera and that whole thing. David knew those things. He understood destiny in his nation, that God was her king. It's interesting to note, until David was king, Israel was always under oppression, up and down, didn't endure any seasons of peace very long at all. So I ask today, what is the cause? What is your cause? What is your purpose? Do you have a sense of destiny about who you are as an individual and of the part of the people of God that you're part of? You have a sense of call, a sense of destiny. I ask, why are you here today? Why are you here in this place today? Why are you sitting in the chair that you're sitting in that seat? What brought you here? Is there a cause? Is there a reason, a deeper reason than just, well, our family comes here, we like it here, it's cool here, nice stuff happening here? Well, it needs to be much deeper than that. A bigger cause, bigger than life, bigger than your life, bigger than this church's vision. The cause is much bigger than that. Do we understand and appreciate where God has placed us? How he has been shaping us through placing us in the family that we've been placed in? Our past experiences of life, bad, good, ugly. God's been shaping you. He's been shaping me by past experiences. All of them, every one of them, is useful in the kingdom of God's plan for you and for me. Do you have a sense of appreciating, understanding the community of people that you're part of? Your neighborhoods, your church, your denomination even? Do you have a sense of appreciation and understanding that God is sovereign in all the events of life and where we are? Our time in history, in the 2000s, we are here. You could have been born 300 years ago. God had you born now for such a time as this. Secondly, David understood his role in his father's house. He understood that he was to serve his father. He understood he was to make his father successful, to be obedient to him, to learn the lessons of life in that stage of life. There's a lot of independence in our day. But I'd like to say to all of us that in our families, and young children, and as parents, God is using the time of growing up to teach valuable lessons of hard work, obedience, faithfulness, endurance, dependability, doing tasks that you don't like doing, in order to shape you for what he knows lies ahead in your future. You don't know, I don't know, we don't know what lies ahead in our future, but God does, and so he uses the past experiences. He uses our family setting to help teach us those things. He uses children to teach parents about their own rough edges. Yeah, God gives me children to knock off the chips that shouldn't be on my life, to shape and mold me. He also uses me to chip off of them sometimes, too. But yeah, it's a two-way thing, as much for me as it is for them. David was precise in carrying out his father's wishes. And we'll see that kind of in the train throughout the story of David. When Samuel came to anoint him, where was he? He wasn't home. He was out taking care of the family's flock. Here in verse 15, David went and returned from an important thing of being in the palace, ministering in music to the king. Comes back. Where does he go? Goes out as a shepherd again. He's willing to serve from the high places to the lowly places. Dependability. David learned dependability. He cared for his father's assets. Now, shepherding, you know, in those days was not the tranquil task that we think it might be. Shepherding was not an easy thing. If you all think shepherds have a cool life, simple, just sitting out under a tree watching these little sheep eat grass. Shepherding was a tough task. We know that a little bit reading about some of the things that David encountered as a shepherd. He had to have to herd his sheep. Maybe he would need to take them to find enough meadow for them to eat. He'd have to take them over the next ridge way down there. Maybe over the next mountain range. He might have to do that. It's a long ways off. Shepherding involved migrating around. We see that in the story of Jacob's sons. And they were so far away, nobody even knew where they were. The neighbors didn't know. The next town didn't know. They were far away looking for grass. This is the kind of work that David had to do, to take care of his father's assets, to make his father successful. Sometimes, a shepherd would have to get all these sheep, maybe 100, 200, 500 sheep, cross a stream, cross a gully. Sheep don't like to do that kind of stuff. How's a shepherd going to get them across to get beyond and get to the next mountain range? It's a tough task being a shepherd, but David was doing it. And then there were bears, and then there were lions and wolves and things that would attack the sheep. We know that from the story of David. And all the while that David was doing this as a young lad, probably representing the age of most of you fellows right here, somewhere in there. All the while he was doing that, he was developing qualities in his life. He was developing skills. Skills with his slingshot. Skills with his rod. Skills with his staff. I can just imagine David out there with a sling, day after day after day. And one of his pastimes was wind up that sling and to see how far he could sling and how hard the impact, what kind of damage he could do to stuff out there in the distance. And he began to understand the size of a stone in its relation to flight and what he could accomplish. The size, the shape of those stones. Until he was so accurate, practiced over and over, accurate until he could hit bullseye every time. Boom, boom, boom. He was practiced. He wasn't wasting his time. He wasn't wasting his life. He understood the cause for which he was supposed to live right then. Serve his dad. Make his father successful. He understood cause as it related to his father's house. Reason, purpose. I suppose that David practiced with the length of the leathers on his sling. You know, the longer it is, the more force, centrifugal force is going to be. And you need different lengths to accomplish different things. God was preparing him. He never knew he'd ever face a giant in his life. He never knew he'd be set against a whole army someday. He didn't know that. God knew, and God was getting him ready. What's God getting you ready for? What are you allowing God to do in your life through tough stuff? Stuff you don't like to do. We don't like to do. What are we allowing God to do in our life to make us, to break us, to mold us, to shape us into who he wants us to become and for what he knows lies ahead? Mark's been saying here, you know, do we have what it takes for the future? Do we have what it takes for what lies ahead? We're preparing. We're in preparation mode. Let God do his work. Let him do what he will. And I believe as when David stood before the giant, I don't think that God just miraculously directed that stone into the head of the giant. I don't believe that. I believe God was involved, without a doubt. But I believe David had prepared. David had honed his skills. David had practiced and practiced until God was able to use a skill that he had developed to accomplish a great task for him someday. God's doing that in your life. Any skill that you have, any talent, any ability, naturally, spiritually, that you have, relationally, God's using that to shape and prepare you for what lies ahead. There's a cause for why you're here. There's a cause for why you're in the family you are, the school that you're in, the community that you're part of, this time in history. And all the while, too, David was communicating with God, developing his spirit, developing his character, his trust in God, understanding of God's sovereignty in his life and how God works. I imagine as David was out there pondering on his past, he was anointed to be king. He's out here in the fields with the sheep. He's serving his father. He's in the king's palace. He's back to sheep herding. God, what are you doing in my life? It doesn't matter. You're serving faithfully what God wants you to do. David had understanding. Every generation faces their own unique challenges. You have your own. We have our own challenges in this generation. We have Goliaths of our own kind. One of the challenges of our time, we live in an information age. This is a giant. We live with systems around us of all kind of information in a society of great indulgence. That's a challenge. That's a giant. That's something that'll slay us if we're not prepared, not equipped. So there's a tendency for our lives, because of all this information, things that we have, and we're spread so thin, and so many times I substitute area for depth. I don't go deep because you're spread out. Your life is spread so far. Let me just tell you, never substitute area for depth. Don't substitute area for depth. Don't ever do that. God wants to take us deep in certain things. Our tendency is for lives to be shallow. Our commitments to be shallow. And, you know, we can't blame it on stuff and things, but we do have internet, we do have iPods and pads, we do have YouTube, stuff that can take our time away from the cause and the focus for what we're called to do. These are tools. Let me say I use all of them. They're all tools. But, you know, if we can waste our lives if they consume us. Don't waste your life. Use them as tools to advance the purpose for which you're here. But don't let it consume your life. Wasting our lives, if we're not intentional in controlling the lull they have on our lives and how easy it is to slip into just meaningless existence. I think that much of the preoccupation of these things, this stuff, this technology has to do with the causelessness of our times and our day. You know, there's little heroes out there anymore, except for people that really don't have a lot to do with advancing a cause, a real cause. The heroes of society today are, you know, the sports figures, and they are actors. Those are the heroes. Where are the heroes that will stand for justice and truth and light and purpose and change the world for good, and will reach into the least of these and give their lives? There's not just that many around anymore. I mean, there's a lot there. We just don't lift them up. We don't focus on them. Because our generation seeks comfort and pleasure and entertainment, as we have become so much spectators instead of initiators. And so often, because of all this stuff, God is put at the edge of our lives, around the circle of our life. He's put at the peripheral instead of at the center. See, the cause that God would have us live for is Him. Him alone. He is the central focus. Everything else revolves around that. The things, other stuff that we do is out from there. But as we have become accustomed in our society and time, is that we have put God at the peripheral. And here's what happens. When we do that, and we are accustomed to thinking that our lives in America are comfortable, and we should be comfortable, and we should have a nice life, we should be able to enjoy pleasure and what we want to do. And when things then don't go the way that we wish they would, when things go awry, and things get out of control, and they spin out of control, maybe our young little children, we just don't know how to deal with their 2, 3, 4-year-old stages. We just don't know what to do. We get frustrated. I remember the stage. It's the terrific 2s and the terrific 3s. Then, or our teenagers, or your children. You don't know how to deal with your parents because, you know, we're just not understanding each other the way we should. And we get all stressed. Or maybe our health breaks down. And now we say, oh God, I can't do what I want it to do. I can't live out my life the way I thought I was going to live it out. If God is at the peripheral, if He's on the edge, now we want to bring Him into the center. Now we want to quickly bring Him into this stressful situation of our life. But you know what happens if God is at the center of our life? If He is the cause for which I live and with which I spend my life, then I will see that what's happening to me right now, this situation that would be potentially stressful and get me out of joint and get me all bent out of shape, this situation is meant for God to glorify Him. It's meant by God to demonstrate to those around me that I, as a believer in Jesus Christ, understand sovereignty, I understand purpose, I understand cause, and I understand that all things that happen to me work together for good. See, that's when God is at the core. If He's on the peripheral, we want to bring Him in. God wants to be at the core of our life. God is most glorified in us, by us, when we are most satisfied in Him. God is most glorified in us when we are most satisfied in Him. Our satisfaction is easy to come in God when things go well. Everything's smooth, hunky-dory. Man, things, life just good, man. I've got a good job. Things are going great. People like me. I'm healthy, making some money. Life is great. Oh, God, I love you. I'm satisfied in you. That's no test. That's no test at all. God is most satisfied, most glorified when you're most satisfied in Him. And our satisfaction comes in God when He's our all in all. He's our stabilizing force. He's our joy. He's our purpose for living. And He's our joy in dying. And He's our guide in sickness. He's our stabilizer in trouble. God is most glorified when we are most satisfied in Him. Are you satisfied with God? Are you satisfied with God when things don't go your way? Are you satisfied with God when your health breaks down and you don't know how long you have to live? You know what? Paul said, let me put this verse up, Philippians chapter 1, verse 20-21. Here's the bottom line for Paul. according to my earnest expectation and my hope, that in nothing I shall be ashamed. Ashamed there is, we want to identify that word really means, it means I will not be disillusioned. I will not be devastated. In nothing I will be devastated. In nothing I will be disillusioned. Our health can disillusion us. Our life circumstances can disillusion us. Why? If Jesus is not at the core. If God is not at the core, if he's on the peripheral, we can be devastated. We want to quickly bring him in there. In nothing I will be disillusioned, devastated, ashamed, but that with all boldness as always, so now also Christ will be magnified in my body, whether it be by life or by death. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Either way, I win. You win. If Jesus, if God is at your core, if the cause that we're living for is the cause of his righteousness, is the cause of his kingdom, we have that understanding. Wow. Christ is at my core, not on the peripheral. Because for me to live is Christ. For me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. That's the cause. That's the reason. How are you serving Christ? How am I living out my life for him? How can I get out of this self-serving posture and get to where I focus on him? And Paul said, it doesn't matter what happens to me in life if I'm greatly honored or if I'm abased. In Philippians chapter 4, he said, I know how what it means to suffer. I know what it means to flourish. I know what it means to be hungry. I know what it is to abound and have plenty, because I can do all things through Christ, which strengthens me. I'm living out the cause of God. It doesn't matter whether I'm very successful as it appears in the eyes of people or whether I'm struggling. God's purpose wants to be fulfilled because he's sovereign. Romans chapter 8, verse 35, can we have that? Paul said, for who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Shall tribulation or distress or persecution or famine or nakedness or peril or sword? No. In all these things, we are more than conquerors to him that loved us. In these things, not in the absence of them, not if they don't come into our life, not if someone else has them, we don't. In all these things, in perils, in being killed, in nakedness, famine, persecution, distresses, in these things, we are more than conquerors. You know what a conqueror is? He defeats his enemy. You know what a more than a conqueror is? He subjugates his enemies. He brings his enemies to accomplish the purpose, his own purposes. That's what a more than a conqueror does. That's what God enables us to do through the tough things in our life. They don't take us away from God. They don't stress us out. They shouldn't. Not if Christ is at the core. And that's the passion of my heart this morning, is that we see God. We get a resetting of our soul and mind and spirit to where Christ is at the core. He's not brought in when we need him. He is the center. He is the reason. He is the cause for why we live. Thirdly, David seemed to understand his time, his cause in for time in history. Time in history. He said, "The Lord has prepared for me." When he went up to speak to Saul, he said, God has prepared me for this. 17. Saul says to him, what makes you think you can go fight against this man? You're just a youth. He's a man of war. Goliath is a man of war from his youth. David said, your servant. Your servant was a shepherd, keeping his father's sheep. And there came a lion, there came a bear, and took a lamb out of the flock. Verse 35, and I went after him, smote him, delivered him out of his mouth, and when he arose against me, I caught him by the beard, and I smote him, slew him. Your servant slew the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them, seeing that he has defied the armies of the living God. David said, I'm prepared for this because God has been working in me. David understood his sense of history, his cause for why God has him here at the battlefront at this time. There's sovereign design to our lives. None of us are here. None of us are here at random. None of us were just born in the line of people being born in the world by random. No. There's destiny on your life for this time in history, with all the technology and all the tools that we have to engage with, to carry out our life purpose. You know, we live today, the least of us live today in a way that kings couldn't live in luxuries they didn't have 100 years ago. You think about that? Wow. Wow. It's amazing. Kids today, children, live in with luxuries that kings did not enjoy not too long ago. For such a time as this, don't waste your life with the stuff. Focus on God. Focus on His call. Seek Him about what He wants you to do and accomplish, where He wants you to go with your life. What does He have on you? What's He keep pressing into your heart? What heartbeat keeps beating within your soul? Let's not waste our life. Our lives are precious. They're valuable. I spend a lot of time in my business helping people define net worth, value. What are you worth? It's pretty important to people today, what they're worth. Now we look at what they own. Got this property, got this house, farm, and got these pieces of equipment, got these cars, got all this money, got this job making X amount of dollars. So I'm thinking worth pretty much. So we begin to lay it out. We look at it. You know, your house worth whatever, $300,000. Okay, your cars, combine them, they're worth $50,000. Get this asset, get this IRA. Here's where you're at. Oh, it looks like you're got about $500,000 in assets. Let's look at your liabilities. Let's look at what you owe. Well, my mortgage on my property is still about $275,000. My cars, I have loans on them. When you break it down, somebody who thought they were really valuable, have a lot of net worth, they might not have much net worth at all. They owe too much. They owe too much money. It's all on leverage. It kind of blows a bubble. I'm not as valuable as I thought. You take assets, you subtract liabilities, and that's the bottom line. But Jesus said, He said, a man's life does not consist in the abundance of things that he has. I try to use my business as a tool or as a forum, as a way of helping people understand real value. Where does real value lie? It lies in your soul. The eternity of your soul, that's where it lies. Yep, these are all things that we need and want and use, but they're not the value of who you are. Jesus said, Mark chapter 8, whosoever will seek to save his life will lose it. Whoever will lose his life for my sake and the gospel's, the same will save it. For what shall it profit a man if he gain the whole world and lose his own soul? What shall a man give in exchange for his soul? What's the value of your soul? I ask you, what's the value of your soul? If you would put a value on your soul, what is it? You know, it really comes down to a very simple thing. The value of your soul is what you love most. That's the value of your soul. Whatever you love most is the value of your soul. So you love your job. You make 150, 200 grand, that's the value of your soul. You love your car, your truck, what's it worth? 15, 20,000, 25, 30. That's the value of your soul. That's what you love most. Whatever you love most is the value of your soul. Examine yourself. I examine myself. What do I love most? Who do I love most? What shall it profit a man if he gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Don't put your love in things and stuff, your value in stuff. Our value resides within the core values of our being, who we are, who God made us, and the qualities that He put within us, core values, things that we build our life on, we live our lives by. Those qualities, they will outlast life. unlike stuff. God's ways are different than our ways. Jeremiah. God's ways are different than our ways. His thoughts are different than our thoughts. Let's begin to look at life in the way that God looks at it. We need to have causes much bigger than our own life. And we've been given a range of influence, a range where we operate. And within the ranges of our influence, God wants to use the values He's placed within us, that He's birthed within us, that He's planted within us to carry out His purposes for our posterity, for our children, for our friends around us. The range of your influence, your school, your community, your home, your job, your ministry, your city, wherever it is, that range of influence is going to be affected by the qualities in you, what you love most, those core values. Really, core values are really doctrine. It's really what they are. The doctrine is not a bad word. Timothy, Paul speaking to Timothy, he used it 10 times and saying, if you're going to make positive impact on your culture and times, you've got to have good, sound doctrine. Doctrine means, here's simply what it means. It means it's the information system that we live by that influences all our beliefs and all our choices. That's doctrine. What you really believe. And it's based on information and the systems that you use to pull from. How we make our choices and what we place value on. Doctrine combines learning, knowledge, with instruction. And it must be God-based and oriented if it's to be sound. So if we're going to affect our culture, we have to have positive core values that God put there, or sound doctrine. Good doctrine. Much of our information age is in conflict with sound doctrine. It's in conflict with it. Because sound doctrine does not come randomly, does not come easily. It does not just fall on us. You know, sound doctrine is coming by seeking the heart of God. It comes by getting deep into God's Word. It comes by asking God's Spirit to illuminate our minds, affect us, empower us, enable us, and cause us to see things from God's perspective. It takes time to do that. In our busy information age, just information just bombarding us from every side, we don't go deep. We don't think deeply. And so our information age is really in conflict with sound doctrine. We have let me explain this way. We have Google Minds and we have a Wikipedia mentality. You know what? If we want to know something, we just Google it. I do it all the time. But you know what Googling does? Or Wikipedia? It can tend to give us a little tiny snapshot. We were talking about this, and Pastor Mark was really introducing this thought to me. We get a little snapshot of an idea or a thing or a concept. Just a little snapshot. We don't see the whole picture. And we don't go deep. And we think this is what it's all about. Let me give you one example. Sobriety or soberness is used in the scriptures. If you look, if you Google that, it would say probably the state of not being inebriated, being sober or serious. Simple. Soberness and sobriety, as God's Word uses it, is much, much deeper than that. Soberness means, actually, here's what it means. It means the exercise of self-control and self-restraint that governs all passions and all desires, and enabling the believer to be conformed to Christ. Wow, that's pretty different than saying the state of not being inebriated, right? The exercise of self-control and self-restraints that governs all passions and all desires, enabling us to be conformed to the image of Christ. Sometimes our view and our concept and our information age is completely wrong, completely false, because it's so shallow. If we would be world changers, we need sound doctrine and core values that will guide us through this time in history, this season in life. If there's anything I want for this church, for this community of believers, is to help equip people, to help equip each of us, to be launched into our causes and into the destinies that God has in our life, the things that He plants within us. And there's things stirring, there's things rising, and I know there's deep passion here in many hearts. And the thing is, how do we bring that to pass, and how do we cause it to flourish? How do we equip and help? And I want lives to be challenged. I want lives here to be stretched and motivated to live with passion for the purpose of God, to be sent out into our communities and into the world, being world changers because we have Christ with us. We look at life differently. He's at the core. He's not on the outside. We don't just bring Him in when we need Him. He is there. People know that. We operate with a passion that is identified. Can I just tell you the story of Telemachus? Maybe I said it before. Telemachus lived back in the 4th century. His life is very impressionable. I named my son, David, Telemachus, after him. Telemachus was a priest in the 4th century in the hills of Rome, somewhere up in the mountains. One day, you know, he was just translating scriptures and doing what priests and that order did. One day he felt the call of God to go to Rome. He had never been to Rome, wasn't quite sure how to get there, but he set out, got his little bag on his back, and set out for Rome. Along the way he kept asking, where's Rome? How do I get to Rome? Which road do I take? Didn't know why he's supposed to go to Rome, but he just knew there was a burning passion in him from something, from God, that he's supposed to go to Rome. Well, he ends up in the big capital city of Rome in a very festive time when the emperor had just conquered some neighboring country and had brought a whole trail of captives in there, and the city was in a festive mood. Their borders had expanded and they were excited about victory, great victory for the emperor. Telemachus found himself being carried with the throng of people into the great Colosseum. 100,000 people filled this place. One of the wonders of ancient world. The Colosseum. He'd never heard of this place. What do they do in here? And he found the crowd in a very, very high adrenaline mood. And as he was there, he took a place in the grandstands and he wondered what his purpose was for being here in Rome. Presently, several men came out of the underneath from the into the sands of the Colosseum. They saluted the emperor and they proceeded to fight with their swords. They were gladiators. Telemachus had never heard of such a thing. He didn't know people do this. They began to fight each other and the crowd was cheering them on. Rah, 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 kill, thrust them through, this and that. And he was horrified. Telemachus said, in the name of God, what's going on here? How can a civilized nation do such a thing? Telemachus gets to his feet, and his little priestly garb, he says, in the name of God, forbear. He shouts out as loud as he could in this great Colosseum. In the name of God, forbear. Didn't make any impact on what was happening in the sands. So he moves further toward the edge, and he's shouting, in the name of God, forbear. In the name of God, forbear. Stop it. And the crowd began to think that he was a clown, dressed like a priest. And so they cheered him on. Yeah, go, little priest. Yeah, yeah. What? He gets down to the edge. In the name of God, forbear. He's shouting it now to the gladiators. Fight goes on. Telemachus, he jumps into the sand. He runs over to where the gladiators are fighting. And he says, in the name of God, forbear. And of course, the gladiators are being distracted now. And the crowd begins to realize that this is some religious fanatic. This guy's messing up their sport. And they began to chant for his death. And the crowd begins to say, run him through, kill him, run him through. And one of the gladiators raises his sword, slashes Telemachus top to bottom. His bowels gush out. He lays in the sand dying. He lifts his hand. He says, in the name of God, forbear. True story. Documented martyr. As Telemachus' blood reddens the sands, something happens in the crowd. A silence comes over them. Conviction of God began to move in the hearts of people. The crowd becomes silent. The gladiators no longer fighting. People smote in their hearts. Some of them get up and leave. More of them begin to leave. More of them begin to leave until the Colosseum is empty. And the emperor, so moved by by what he saw happening here. One man, one cause, one purpose, one passion. And the emperor declared, never again will man fight against man in this Colosseum. It was the last gladiator ever to fight in Rome. One man with a cause. Didn't know really why he was called to leave his place in the hills. But there was cause. And it affected the nation. What is the cause for why you are here? What is the cause for this time for you in history? With the resources and tools that we have. They're not for our toys. They're for the glory of God and to be used for that. I want to close with this. Some years ago, a few years ago, I was seeking God about some factors that would strengthen me morally and with vision for my life. Because some of my friends had wasted their lives, had walked out of their families after years of lovingly serving, godly leading, and they walked out of their lives, their families' lives, living some of the greatest treasures they ever had to walk away from it. Sold out cheaply. And I said, God, how can this be? How can people do this? I thought they had cause that they lived for. I said, God, give me qualities. Give me qualities that will stabilize me and will cause me to be strong for life and the challenges that we face in this time of history. I want to finish like Paul did. I want to hear the accolade of heaven saying, well done, my son. Paul said, I am now ready to go. I have fought a good fight. I have finished my course. I have kept the faith. Now there's a crown of righteousness for me. I want to hear that. I want to hear the accolade of heaven. I live for the applause of heaven. I want to live for the applause of heaven alone. I want to be able to hear God say, you've done everything that I ask of you to do. You've carried out, you've lived your course. You've done it well. I want him to be able to say that about each of you, each of us. You've done well. You've carried out the assignments I gave you, the cause for which I had you here. And so as I was seeking God about that, I said, God, give me something. And I was in the Word, and I was in some books. And one night, as I was sleeping, God gave me a song. You know, I'm not a songwriter. I've never written a song. But he gave me a song. In the night, I woke up at 2 o'clock, pitch dark. I was in a cabin, didn't have electricity. I lit a lamp, and I began to write as rapidly as I could. The words that were ringing clearly in my mind, and I wrote. And he gave me the tune. You know what? Most of the times when I have a dream, I wake up, and probably most of you kind of forget what the dream was. You really don't know, you know, what was that all about? I remember a little piece and this and that. Can't put it all together. This one, God put it all together for me. Give me the words. Give me the tune. It speaks to the values, ten values, core values that God clearly gave me that he wants me to live by. It's in a song form. It's a, you know, I refer to it often in my personal time because it's dear to me. It was a radical thing of God to give me that. We like to sing that. I like to sing that here in closing. And I hope that it will stir each of our hearts to look at how precious life is and the things that God gives us and the things that he wants to put within us. We can't compromise. These things are non-negotiable for me. They're not for sale. Not at any price. I don't want to barter. I don't want to give them up. If we can put those words up.
All my life's an offering to the King of Kings. All that he has made me for, I'll always want to be. I will never sell out. justice and integrity, these are not for sale. All my life's an offering to the King of Kings. All that He has made me for, I'll always want to be. I will never sell out to this world's allure. For my life's a sacrifice, it's Jesus I adore. All my life's an offering, it is not for sale. Love and faith and liberty, these shall never fail. Truth and right and honor, kindness, purity, justice and integrity, these are not for sale.
We just bow and pray. Oh God, our strength, God, our Father, God, our lover, our creator, God, the author of our lives, the sustainer of them, the one who puts cause and passion and vision within our hearts and lives. God, come today into this group of people and continue to cleanse me and each of our lives so we can become all that you want us to be. Life is so full of hurt and pain. And you have given to us tools and you've given to us weapons to destroy strongholds and come into lives with mercy and grace. God, I know that there's call on lives here today. God, maybe there's people here today who have said, what is my purpose? They don't know purpose. Maybe they're here today and they don't know you. And they have really no cause to live except for comfort and pleasure. I pray today, Lord, that they could know you. They could come to faith in Jesus where they find Jesus at the core. God, if there's those who've been, you've been beating in their hearts and there's been seeds planted where you want to bring to pass something that they don't even realize or understand. God, I pray keep feeding and growing that and bringing into clarity what that is. For those who are involved in causes, God, sustain them for the journey and enable them with grace and strength, oh God. For our world is waiting for answers to so many of the needs and problems. You have the solutions. You have the answers, God. We come to you, Lord, as our all in all, as our joy in living and our joy in dying. I just like to today, as our hearts are pausing here and searching and asking God, if somebody's been touched today, to say, you know what, that's me, I'm there, I want to dedicate my life more fully, I would just ask you to come and give that to God. I'd ask you to come and just acknowledge that, receive a greater impartation of His life and His truth and His purpose and His cause. You know, school is about to start again. Young folks, there's great causes there for you to live and stand for.